Welcome to the Digitally Sick podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to a new edition of Digitally Sick. My name is Alex Butler from Foundry 3. I have with me Faisal. Faisal, how are you doing?
Hey, Alex, how's it going?
Very well, thank you very much. It's much more formal than normal. And also a friend, Dave, who did a podcast last time on all of the, on basically bigging up Pharma, for want of a better term, you know, celebrating the great work that Pharma does, not just in the obvious perspective of his work in medicine, but also the stuff around innovation and the things that have gone really, really well. So to counterbalance that, we're going to talk about mess-ups, essentially, where things have gone wrong and why they went wrong, you know, what we did about it, if we did anything. And I suppose most importantly, how we can try and not repeat those same mistakes again, especially as the world slowly and hopefully can come out of the current COVID pandemic situation. So Dave, maybe you can give us a bit of initial thoughts on the subject, tee up for us.
I think it's absolutely cool to be dead proud of Pharma and all of our achievements, and simultaneously have the confidence to recognise like mistakes, either as an industry, as agencies, as Pharma, as individuals. I think that's true of everywhere. But actually, I think it's an important time to do it because the opportunity in the window we've got post-pandemic to, you know, do incredible work and support clinicians, support patients, support families, you know, is now because of this tech-enabled society. But I just want to seize the moment, be confident to do it, but also not repeat some of the mistakes we've made in the past.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Faisal, do you have any initial thoughts?
I think so. Yeah.
I've seen an absolute truckload of examples of things that have gone wrong.
I think we just, obviously it's just, as building on what Dave said, is just there's so many things we need to think about, but I think we think about a lot of things as just campaigns, i.e. that it's only got a few months to run, whereas what we should be doing, or a year to run, etc., or we launch it and we forget about it. And there's many examples of webs. I mean, the key example is there's so many pharma websites that have like one visitor a month, and nothing's ever uploaded, etc. So there's loads of examples of that. I think one key way to look at it is, what's this going to look like in a year's time, 2 years' time, 3 years' time, rather than just short campaign ideas?
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, kick us off then with your first sound.
I mean, I've not made any mistakes. No, joking. I think it's interesting as an agency because you're surrounded by brilliant talent, and with brilliant talent gives you confidence, and you're also, you know, sometimes you think you can take on the world and you think you can do any brief. And I would say, and I look back, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, and one of the biggest mistakes we made is when you get overly confident in this, you step outside of your comfort zone. And I was working with a client, you know, a few years ago, and known them for almost all my career. And together we came up with them. It was a brilliant idea. And it was all geared around training in the field force and just trying to get better proximity and supporting them. And we did a pilot, and it was great, and the results were brilliant, and we were dead proud of it, and it was cost effective to develop and everything you'd want it to be. So obviously the natural next step is then to go, let's make this global. And your natural next step is going, yes, let's do that. And for me it was a lesson, because you know, the next 12 months were anything but fun. We certainly didn't, you know, replicate some of the success. And I just think it's really important, you know, to recognise and understand where key capabilities lie, and then understand when to bring in partners to support you with other things. So that for me is like, you know, a big lesson, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Okay, so as you know, nobody would ever guess, we don't really plan discussions most of the time. And so, you know, in thinking about this, as you know, you were talking, Dave, I'm thinking to myself, I've been relatively fortunate over my career, in, you know, that I was fortunate enough to be involved in projects that were mostly trying to be innovative, mostly trying to be doing things differently than before, hopefully better, and that was the idea, but definitely differently, and sometimes doing things for the first time. And I suppose, looking back now on those 20 years, and actually crystallised by what I've learned from the pandemic, I actually think in order sometimes to get, you feel that sometimes you get to get things done, to get people motivated to do different, motivated to check. I think sometimes we've been too much of an overpromise on the things that, you know, the impact of the things that we're doing, you know, would have. And I don't think it's an overpromise in the grand scheme of things, but you know, I remember the early days talking about social media, and it felt so positive. Now, actually, social media has dramatically changed health and healthcare, and it's dramatically changed the way the world manages itself and what we can learn about people. And there's so many things, from clinical trials to, you know, kind of behavioral science, to bringing communities of people together who have never even seen someone with their disease, to so many things. But I think that it was a bit of an overpromise for what pharma's done, because I look at it now, and obviously there's examples of good work, you know, of course there is, but a lot of the time it's simply another PR corporate communications channel. Now, hopefully, because it's a snapshot in time, you know, that it will mature and pharma will do all of those things. I hoped it would. But then I think across all of the things, you know, when we did some of those first early mobile health applications, so, you know, we had some great success, but most of the work that's been done by pharma in digital health isn't validated, has no evidence behind it, and has had limited impact with patients or helping doctors. So I think, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sometimes to get excited about the new stuff is to sometimes overplay it rather than to practically frame it and actually then invest for the long term to make sure that you actually have sustained success. I don't know whether that makes sense.
And that's the problem, isn't it? Because to get people excited, you have to be ambitious with the vision. And then to secure, you know, the inevitable, like, budget and time and resource and backing, you need to be ambitious in terms of the impact. But then it sets you in a position where maybe it's difficult to kind of fill that. And I draw parallels with, I was all running around going, it's okay to fail. You know, you learn by failing. But ultimately, it's probably somebody's job. So if somebody's, you know, heading up a project and that individual is accountable for it to be, you know, to fail. So is there the structure and the culture around them to go, that really is okay, more than it just been?
You really got to pick the topic. That is an absolute hot button trigger for me. I really can't bear the use of that type of terminology. It's great to fail and fail quickly. Well, it's all very well if it's not your company or your job, or quite frankly as well, is it okay to fail in?
Yeah, but
if you create something with an application, for instance, to manage their oncology toxicities, it's not cool to say, oh, yeah, sorry about that, it's actually failed. So, you know, we're actually pulling it, or it wasn't doing the job it was supposed to do. I get it. I get the idea behind it. But I listened to a brilliant Silicon Valley talk by a guy who was an older entrepreneur in his 50s. And he said that he hates that because it's never good to fail. But what's important is if you do, you learn really quickly and you rectify that failure. So Dave, thanks for that. Sorry, Bides, carry on.
I see your point, because there's so many counter arguments to that Facebook statement, but the Zuckerberg statement and stuff. But the essence of it is test. It's agility. It's agile development, isn't it? Test it, put it out there, see how it works. Test it, see how it put it work. But we don't, if we take it in the agile way, we don't do enough of that.
Yeah, but that's exactly it. It's a misappropriation of where a term comes from to something else.
Yeah.
It's only when we're building a product or service to build it quickly, build it around the user. Of course, use agile and lean methodologies. And yeah, to get stuff out early and so you can refine it. But it doesn't apply to everything that you do in the same way. I don't know what you think, Dave. Obviously, you ran a technology business for many years, so I don't know how you feel about that.
I just think someone said it, and then a lot of people repeated it, and it became like a trendy thing to say, and, you know, a benchmark for innovation. And I don't necessarily agree with it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got to come up with something that actually you can then deliver, and then work towards it and do the initial evaluation to check that it's going to be feasible and you're gonna make it happen. But my point is, really, more than anything, you know, when we look at the mistakes we made, we've just got to create the right culture to facilitate it. And that's not down to an individual, it's down to, you know, changing the culture and changing the structure of an organization to facilitate people to do better work.
Yeah. Yeah. What about any other ones? As you mentioned the kind of short termism, I suppose, for one of the better term that often, you know, comes with any industry actually, but I suppose there's many reasons for that. You were talking about, you know, kind of the campaign culture, I suppose.
I think it's just there's so much short. People are just seeing it as a campaign. It's like, right, we're going to run this campaign for the next 6 months and just then leave it. It's what you're doing. It's like, is there phase one? Is there phase two? Is there phase three? Is there phase... Do you see what I mean? So, for example, we worked on products at Amazon. So, for example, we worked on Kindle, right? I think back in 98 on Kindle. And do you see what I mean? And it wasn't launched till 2005, 2007. So, do you see what I mean? We had that vision in mind, and the vision was the book has to be downloaded within 30 seconds or 20 seconds. And in 98, it took 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes. It took a long time because of the bandwidth and stuff. But we had the long-term strategy of it needs to load within 20 seconds. If it takes... if that takes 6 months or takes 8 years or 10 years... then that's fine. Do you see what I mean? It was like, as long as the experience is really good. Whereas in agencies and stuff, we just think campaigns. We don't think what is the best thing we can do for this app? What's the best thing we can do for this website? Is it that we want doctors to come back every month, every week? What does it take to do that? Rather than create the designs, do the UX, create the designs, write the copy, and then launch it. Do you see what I mean? And then there's no analytics measurement. There's nothing afterwards. Do you see what I mean? There's nothing built in for that mentality, which I think we might need to change.
Yeah. I think that's probably my biggest learning, if I'm honest. And that's coming up with ideas and campaigns that are sustainable and almost self-perpetuating, because you're right. You know, me and Alex worked on different things where, you know, a lot of time and effort goes into something, a lot of value and impact is brought. But then, you know, what happens 12 months, 2 years, 5 years from then, when it is having a positive impact? So I would say, from a personal point of view, you know, a mistake I've made is sometimes been too short-term in the thinking. And the biggest lesson is going, how do you create something that's going to bring value, you know, indefinitely and evolve and grow and build momentum itself?
Yeah. If you look at it, if you think about advertising in the creative world in general, Dave, if you think about it, the Churchill dog, how long's that been going for? Do you see what I mean? The bunny, how long's that been going for? And then if you look at even like, so Vosbrunn dog technique, that's been going since the 80s, but that was made, I think, when Audi were first born. Do you see what I mean? John Hegarty went to the factory and he found a little sign in the corner saying Vosbrunn dog technique. And he took that, brought it back, and everyone keeps on... I mean, you say Vosbrunn dog technique, everyone knows it's Audi. Do you see what I mean? We don't have that in pharma.
I think
longevity of the campaign.
It does have that longevity, but it takes a long time for medicine to come to market. I think that we all know the character... Well, I think we all probably can think of the characteristics of the different pharmaceutical companies. Obviously, they're all doing similar things, but they all have different cultures and different feelings about them. I think that, you know, some of the old brands were, you know, back in the day, you can still remember campaigns 30 years ago, you know, 20 years ago. It's the sustainability for me, I think, is more, and this is again kind of looking at it now as who I am now back, but actually the creativity, the cool ideas, the really talented forward-thinking people, and they're not the important people. The important job to be done is to integrate it genuinely into the business, into the processes, into the way the business works and runs. Because if you don't, it's literally nothing more than an experiment. You know, if that's what's happened with, you say, social media, and it's what is happening in digital health, you need to become a sustainable, integrated part of how you do business and how you communicate to people or how you add value to people. And the simple thing about the value, mutual value exchange is at the heart of basically virtually every good engagement program, whether it's a product or service or whether it's a campaign, that's ever been done, which is that you find a place where you're adding real discernible value to your audience, customer, whatever. and that sort of brings a mutual value for you. Beyond it, there's lots of models that try and show it in different ways, and I think that's what we've not been so good at, is that, you know, really understanding what the value is that we're delivering, say, to a healthcare professional or to a patient. We do with the medicines, you know, because we, you know, we absolutely do. I don't know whether we often do with the things that we provide. And that's an explanation for anything, from brand sites that have no discernible value to a healthcare professional, to applications that in real life don't have any meaningful value to the patient. And often those things are not integrated into the system that we want them to be used in. You know, a patient is integrated into professional health records, into clinical workflows, into even validated with an evidence base, or, you know, connected. You know what I mean? I think it's about integration. It's just that's really dull, or people think it is, so people don't want to concentrate on it.
When you talk about bringing value, I couldn't agree more, you know, in terms of creativity, strategy, innovation, all geared around better supporting clinicians, or better supporting patients, or better supporting care partners. I 100% agree. One of the benefits of the new world we're going into, I think, is we can consign one of the biggest mistakes to the trash bin for my new homeland. And that's going, people aren't on social media, people aren't using smartphones. The number of, I think, really, really, really meaningful ideas that I've seen, witnessed, and part of, which, you know, would bring huge value to the healthcare professional or any of the stakeholders, whereby unfortunately someone said, yeah, but not everyone's got that access to technology, or not everyone can use it. You know, for me, that mistake should never, ever be repeated anymore. Because moving forward, as I say, every day, people are getting better and better at using technology. You know, a lot of people now live their lives through technology. And I just think that's just created this incredible opportunity to do really, really meaningful work, as you described, Alex.
I think it's a really, really good point. I worked on a report, it must have been 7 or 8 years ago now, for World Health Organization. Don't shout at me, people are very divisive about them. But anyway, it was about age and use of technology. And even all those years ago, you only really started to see a drop-off, a significant drop-off in the capacity to use technology rather than using it in different ways over 80, 85, where it did plummet. You know, my father looks after his condition, our condition with things like a smartwatch and a phone. He doesn't think of himself as any kind of technophile or, you know, a doctor of technology. I think you're right there, and it just doesn't stack up anymore to think that, you know, for that as an argument. I mean, what does stack up, of course, is it's stepping up to the plate to make sure that people have access to technology and is equitable access to that for things like, you know, for telemedicine, for example, or remote patient monitoring. We desperately don't want one of the biggest, you know, indicators of health outcomes, which is social demographics. You know, so we can highlight issues, but the issue isn't people's desire to use these technologies. There's other issues, social and cultural, that we need to overcome.
Yeah, and that applies to society and every kind of sector and everything. And you know, we've all got to work towards resolving that, like 100%. To that point, one of the things we've got to avoid as well, which I absolutely despise, and it's another mistake we've made as an industry, is innovation for the sake of innovation.
Yeah.
Like, nothing frustrates me more. Or campaigns for the sake of campaigns. Like, everything we do has got to absolutely have that purpose behind it and the value. And then when we come up with the products and the services and the innovations, you know, doing communication is geared to bring real benefit and not just to win some awards or to look clever or to drive revenue, but actually meaningful work.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there's a guy I know who's a professor of engineering with a special focus on AI and specifically neural networks and human decision making. And it's quite funny because, you know, as I always speak to him, he never talks about an interest in AI. He's talking about the specific applications of how he wants to use it to try and improve the world. And yet you will get people in, you know, kind of pharma who probably, and I'm going to use the word probably, have very little knowledge of the multifaceted nature of AI, who just say they're really interested in the AI and pharma and healthcare. And, you know, vagaries like that, just being interested in supposedly looking like you're innovative. I mean, you know, you could see people going from being super interested in social media, so then super interested in digital health and an expert in that, maybe through behavioural science along the way, then we're super interested in blockchain, then super interested in AI, and it's without meaningful application and genuine knowledge, it's all pointless, really, to be honest. Sorry, Fazi, you wanted to jump in.
No, I mean, I was just going to say today's point about innovation in agencies, I think that's a mistake. We need to change that terminology, because all of a sudden people think, right, innovation in agencies should be something. We need augmented reality or virtual reality in this pitch or in this campaign, yeah, and stuff like that. I think that's one of the mistakes we need to change, is that terminology of innovation. Because people, I've sat in meetings and there's been an end-of-life product for 80-year-old pluses, and someone's come out and said, the company's very innovative and we need augmented reality for this patient. And I'm thinking, what the hell are you on about? Do you know what I mean? It's like, that terminology needs to change, because people think all of a sudden innovation has to be augmented reality, virtual reality, or something jazzy for a stand.
No, I mean, it's not just agency. There was one time when we were wanting to work in a disease area where we're asked to pitch in disease area, and we pitched digital health solution. And the solution was rooted in the science of what we knew could work with regard to being able to predict this serious event happening to somebody, and it's a child as well, to inform and predict, in time, and to provide virtual assistance on an everyday basis with tracking this disease, virtually frictionless for the actual user as such. It was just there to warn them of a serious event. And in the feedback for why we didn't win, and I did not win that often, but was that it wasn't innovative enough. But, the point was that it was rooted in what was actually going to do it. For they didn't win in some, I won't even say what it is in case anyone can recognise it, but something that was, I thought, not fit for purpose. And now, that solution that I pitched, we didn't build it at all, but I've seen that that's now in application. That's been used by a university hospital in the US. It's been used to support real patients with their health. And so I think you're right. Just, saying, we're really open to innovation. We'd really like to do, kind of this, and this. Don't start with the technology. Choose the people that actually can solve the problem for you.
Well, innovate. To be honest, innovation at any company or any corporate is actually very hard to do, because when you come up with new innovative ideas or new ways of thinking, which innovation is, that immune system's just going to eat you up, because we've always done it this way. Why are we doing it a different way? And that was pre-COVID terminology. I think now we just have to accept it. What do you think about the innovation terminology, Dave?
I know there are people who turn around and say they don't like the word innovation, or you shouldn't keep using the word innovation, all these things. And I couldn't disagree more. Mm. Would you not use the word creative?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Would you not? And at the end of the day, who cares if you do or you don't use the word? What we're talking about is trying to come up with brilliant ideas.
Yeah, new thinking.
In this instance, in technology. So I do not worry about the use or not use of the label. And again, it's just people jumping on the bandwagon going, don't use the word. Alex, to your point, but the key thing is that the work is meaningful. So a few years ago, I did a pitch to this client, and I always like to have something, up your sleeve at the end, just go, ta-da. And as luck would have it, the client turns around and goes, what do you think will be the next big thing in technology? I'm like, I can't believe you just asked me that question. Here's what I prepared earlier. And just had the most incredible idea around them, potentially crowdsourcing design and clinical trial, and it made sense because of the ask and the strategy and all these things. It was a beautiful idea. And then they're like, no, I don't think you've understood. Do you think it'll be virtual reality? Do you think it'll be augmented reality? And I was like, a little piece of me died.
I don't know.
And that for me was everything that you just said, Alex. It was just going, someone was only interested in technology for the sake of technology, as opposed to there is a business challenge or there's an opportunity or we can have a profound impact on society, and how do we do it? And that will always be my motivation.
And in fact, we've spoken about some of these subjects before, I suppose, in many ways, often that leads you to completely misunderstand the challenge that you've actually got in front of you. So, you know, this, so many people don't have a chatbots. Chatbots is the least interesting thing in the world. I mean, when it works well, like Amazon's, it's a really seamless and really helpful experience. Brilliantly done, I would say, in fact. But the point of the chatbot and NLP and, you know, kind of machine learning and all the rest of it is that essentially it's all about the log. It's all about the back end stuff. It's all about, you know, the capacity to solve many problems for a doctor with a chatbot and pharma. I just don't see many problems. It could be something, maybe some in pharmacy, stuff like that. But pharma is not even remotely set up to manage that log. And no one ever talks about that. But if you don't have a log, if you don't have the machine learning from the way it's interacted with human beings, you know, refining, you can just get a plug and play bot that essentially can solve none of your problems. And but yet, victims have won awards. You know, these chatbot plugins have actually managed to win awards, you know, within the pharma industry. And that's why I think it's interesting that I think innovation is literally too easy to do in companies and very, very difficult simultaneously. Too easy because it's so easy to just say, right, we'll do a chatbot and we get Mason to do it. They pretend they're building it and they're actually buying it, getting off the shelf. They did you a chatbot and fantastic. But if that's not integrated into your company system, into your processes, you may or may not take off. But it's not, if you see my point, if it's not systemic across the where you're really adding value to your customers or to patients or whoever. And that's hard, because that means building processes and procedures.
It's interesting, because in our previous conversations, we've spoken about pharma is expert at scientific and medical discovery and shouldn't always try and, you know, recreate and re-engineer itself to be an Amazon or an IBM or any of those things. And I think when you talk about chatbots, it's an example because, and I said it in my opening, you know, recognize your strengths. Mm-hmm. You know, recognize when you need to bring in experts and partnerships that maybe could bring value. And one of the reasons I really like working with you, Alex, is because you understand the importance of the log, as you describe it, that sits behind in the engine, that's bringing real value. And I would say, in addition, you also need to have that exceptional experience, you know, and something that actually from a front end, you want to engage with and you want to, you know, ask the questions and get the results and kind of partner with it. And that for me, you know, in loads of ways sort of brings a full circle. You know, it's got to be meaningful. It's got to be well considered. You've got to recognize your own limitations and have the right partners. And if you do that, then we can do some good stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, there's no doubt about it, is there, that if we were doing this podcast in another industry, that we would probably be having the same discussion. Obviously different in nuance, but it's not like every industry that's upheld up as a keynote at, say, a pharma conference. If you're in that industry, you probably think you've got lots to do better. There's lots more that you can do. The race is still yet to be run, so to speak. So, you know, it's yeah. If you're not careful, then you begin to think that you are in a worse position than you are. But did you have anything further to say? Or
I think when you think about those other industries, they make more mistakes or jump on the buzzwords or technology thinking first, more than actually what we do, and had more mistakes in those industries as well.
Exactly that. So I think you're right, Dave, when you said at the very beginning, there isn't a contradiction between celebrating the brilliant stuff that we do and talking about how we can do better, because they are literally one and the same thing, actually, in reality, which is, you know, the capacity to refine what we do. And I think the bit that's excited me about, you know, kind of where we might be at, is that for myself, I've realised just how important it is that you focus on the key challenges in what you do with regard to. You know, that when things went the way they did, continuity of care for doctors being able to speak to their patient, continuity of care for being able to do remote consultation, remote patient monitoring, how it has to be integrated into clinical workflows and health systems. How you can actually, if you do take that approach as a pharma company, you can directly help patients find the doctor, speak to a doctor and get a new medicine that could change their life. Just new technology. And how different is that to a brand.com or to a self-directed in detail? So, you know, for me, it's really exciting. and for me to refocus myself to make sure that I don't accidentally fall into that trap of, you know, kind of focusing on the wrong things. Final thoughts for both of you? Why is it the only final thoughts?
Go on, Dave.
I agree, like, for me, you know, I find myself in this fortunate position whereby I've got the time to kind of reflect and think. And I am excited to be in pharma. And I do think we need to learn the lessons. And I do think we need to work differently. And I'm enjoying having conversations with different people about what that future should look like. But on the back of, you know, the incredible work done by the scientists in terms of vaccines, you know, and all the other scientific discoveries, I think we can do great stuff in this industry. And I'm excited to think about it and move forward with it.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, just building on that, I think, as I was saying earlier, I just think if we build on the great work the scientists do and in our campaigns or in our marketing, etc., just think long term.
Yeah, you know, that phrase is, you know, it's so interesting because it's literally what I used to say. I don't know if you remember, Dave, when we were, you know, all those years ago when I was in the pharma industry, and that, you know, we're so brilliant, as I was talking about pharma, the science. You know, why can't we just be core as brilliant, you know, at some of the other stuff that we do? Let's essentially do what's right, step up to the mark to bring all that brilliant work done by the science to life. Make sure it gets to the right people. Make sure that we communicate it in the right way and that we support people to live up to the brilliant work the scientists do. Okay, great. Well, that was... I really enjoyed that. Hopefully you're listening, you did too. But if you have your own thoughts or want to get in touch about anything, then please do. You can find us in the usual places. And thanks once again, Dave, for coming on. It's been great. And we've got one more to do as well, which we're also looking forward to. So, thank you. And thanks, Fires, as well.
Thanks a lot.
As always. So, Dave, thank you. And we'll speak again very soon.